Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes Show. We are your green and gold gospel, your best source for Rowdy's coverage, coming to you live on Radio St. Pete Online. We are presented by Taco Bus. We are not washed away from the hurricane, thankfully. Our thoughts and prayers definitely 100%, and the support that we've been able to show definitely go out to everybody in Southwest Florida. That was as devastating a scenario as pretty much you get, as hurricanes will show. Storm surges on, if you're a coastal resident, storm surge is the biggest threat. That's the biggest problem. Always has been. So our thoughts are with everybody down there, all the victims, for those who passed away and their families. If you are listening to this, whether live or on podcast, whether you're a local or somewhere else in the country or even the world, please consider contributing to any one of a number of efforts for fundraising for the victims down there in Southwest Florida. It will definitely be a big deal. There are whole communities on those barrier islands that were completely cut off, that are only accessible by air or boat. These folks are going to need all the help you can get, or you can give, sorry.
And we should mention that the team is doing a drive at Saturday's game. They tweeted out, it's on their website, for things to be donated. They're, along with the Rays, are donating money and supplies as well. But there is a supply drive, like relief drive, at Saturday's game.
Thank you for mentioning it, because, yeah, they mentioned that. I hadn't been on Twitter much this morning, and I think they mentioned it today or something, because I don't think it wasn't from previous days, I don't think.
Yeah, they're doing that, and the proceeds from the 50-50 raffle for the remaining three home games are going to Hurricane Relief also.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, thank you. I had missed that news. I knew the Rays were doing their drives, and I saw those announcements. And I know that those announcements were made with Rowdies in partnership, but it didn't mention anything at Owl Link specifically, so I was kind of like, I don't know what's going on there. Okay, so good. Thank you for letting me know that. Live on the air. It's scary to consider that could have been us, you know, in a more direct way. And you know, yeah, like, we all know people that live on these barrier islands, right? Like, we have them all up and down the coast, all the way up. I mean, Dan, you don't really, but like, those of us in populated areas, we know people that are in these barrier island communities here. And it's just like, this is a horrifying reminder of just how bad it could be for people that we know and love. Like, these are people we love here in our area, and this could be them, like, one day. This could have been them last week.
I was fairly certain that it was going to be, because where I am, I'm only about like a mile and a quarter from the coast. And on Tuesday, when the Manatee County turned their recommended Zone B evacuation into mandatory, I was already making arrangements to go bunker with some friends. I wanted to make sure that I was not going all the way across the state, because as I have experienced from cross-state evacuations before, getting back is almost as worse as dealing with the storm itself, between the damage from the storm, the electricity outages, the flooding of rivers and creeks. And it really, really, that decision paid off. Like, where I ended up, there was no power outage at all. Nothing. By the time I got back to my house, the power had been out for, I think, maybe 6 hours, already back on by the time I got home. My neighbor works for Manatee County, knows all the topographical maps and elevation info. I mean, Stephen, he'd probably be one of your favorite people, because he could just, you know, I see you're just grinning right now. And he was like, yeah, he's like, look, if it had been 12 feet of surge, we would have been fine. We couldn't have gotten out of our neighborhood because the areas around us are lower lying and zone A stuff. He's like, but 16 feet, we wouldn't have homes anymore. And I've, you know, lived in Florida all my life on either coast. I have never once owned a hurricane shutter of any kind, nor a generator, and I have been dodging the big ones since Andrew, Charlie, Irma, now Ian, and I don't know how my luck has held up this much. We just went back to school yesterday. Was our first day back after since the Monday before. I have coworkers, I have students that don't have power, that don't have water, because on one side of our county, we've got flooding out on the eastern part of the county. On the western end of the county, power is just now getting restored, hopefully by this afternoon, this evening. Supposedly the rest of it's supposed to be back on for everybody else, and I just kind of ended up right in the middle, in the sweet spot where I didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. And yeah, it was pretty scary there for a little while.
Yeah, thankfully, I'm more like central Pinellas where I'm at. So, like, St. Pete, and again, like, this is going to be true no matter what. The closer to the storm you are, the worse the effects, right? So, imagine that. Southern Pinellas County had more effects than northern or central Pinellas County. Shocking. It's crazy how that works. But yeah, thankfully, like, I didn't lose power at all. I had several moments of power dips and things like that, but it never went out completely. I got super, super lucky there. But yeah, I mean, we had people that had no power in St. Pete for going on, I think, like, almost like 5 or 6 days. And this was a storm that was like 100 miles away, you know? Mm-hmm. It's incredible how powerful this stuff is, you know? I mean, it really is wild.
Sorry, I would contribute, but Lilo is trying to take the soundboard off the couch and is hitting buttons.
Yeah, we're not buying your excuses that there are things in your house left to distract you, because we can see that there is quite literally like a couch and that's it.
Yeah, you have nothing. There's the two dogs. I don't have a room to hide in anymore from the dogs. And like, Lilo's been trying to take the microphone out of my hand. That's why I shifted positions. Now that they're on the floor playing, but I moved the soundboard so I could lay down off the floor so they don't step on it. Now she's just booping it with her face and just hitting buttons and everything she can think of. So this is going to be an adventure on my end tonight.
Yeah, but Dad, what does this do? What does this do? What does this do? What does this do? Well, again, thank you, for everybody that was checking in with all of us. You know, if you listen to the show otherwise, like, you know, it means a lot. It's always awesome to know that you got people out there that care about you, that want to make sure you're safe. So we appreciate those folks of you that were able to do that. That means a lot, and it goes a long way. All right. So the Tampa Bay Rowdies played a game this weekend after it got bumped today. Because of travel issues and everything else, the team relocated to Melbourne before the storm. For those of you that are not Florida folks, Melbourne is on the East Coast. And obviously, because the storm ended up coming into, you know, through Central Florida and stuff, most of the airports end up shutting down. A lot of the there's flight disruptions everywhere. So they weren't able to secure, like, a trip out, you know, that would allow them to play on Saturday night. So the game was shifted to Sunday. Pretty credible to think that we've had two games this year get moved a day because of travel issues. I'd be curious.
And another bump to 2 weeks for storm issues.
Oh, and if well, yeah, I mean, there was that one that got shifted over to next week, the El Paso match. I wonder, has three schedule changes outside of COVID, if three schedule changes have been required by, like, really any club specifically due to, like, natural disaster or weather-related events? Because, you know, the Rowdies earlier this year, we had that one match that got a home match that got pushed back a day because weather and what was it? Weather and issues with the planes themselves prevented us from getting out of Oklahoma City and the Tex and Dallas and such to get back home. Like, I wonder how many times that's happened where a team has had three schedule changes in one season for totally natural disaster related or weather related events. Like, I wonder if that's ever happened. Cause I'm sure there were some clubs in the COVID years that had multiple reschedulings because of COVID, but
are we counting Oakland's surface last year? Their playing surface is a natural disaster. Didn't they have a bunch of games moved at the beginning of the season because they could not actually play on their turf?
Ooh.
And can you count artificial turf as a natural disaster?
Yes.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Just for the memes. Yeah, let's call that a disaster. That is a natural disaster.
That's only the one that jumps to mind. I'm sure there was something in NASL days, but parts of my memory have chosen to block themselves out for my mental health well-being. That includes much of anything involving NASL. My brain is now watching another league.
Yeah, we got some stuff to talk about tonight, don't we? Man. All right. Some of this stuff I don't want to talk about, but we're going to talk about some of it. Okay.
It's like they heard, hey, we heard these guys are going off the air. Let's throw some stuff at them real quick.
Feels like that way. All right. Tonight, our Patreon executive producer, because we do appreciate the continued support that we get from all of you folks that have been participating, especially for those of you that were a part of this for many, many years. Tonight, it is Mike Pendleton, who, of course, is a legend everywhere.
He's somehow become, like, a weird voice of conscience in the U.S. soccer community. Like, everything goes on. Like, most of the U.S. soccer goings-ons that are not, like, USL and the Rowdies, I find out through a Mike Pendleton tweet thread of him being pissed off or calling out some grifter starting a new league or something. So somehow Mike Pendleton is, like, becoming the center of the U.S. soccer universe.
I honestly kind of use him as a gauge when I meet new people, like people, like say I meet people that I've only known from Twitter before, and I'm kind of like, hey, did you see that Fat Seven Deuce tweets about whatever? And they're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, you follow Mike, you're okay.
You're part of the cool crowd.
I check the mentions, I check the likes. I'm like, okay, these are my people.
That's awesome. But no, we do. We appreciate you, Mike. 100%. We love all the support that you've been able to give us. It's I don't even know if you can put it into words. Like, you can't do this show without people that are doing Patreon for what that contribution has meant to how we've run things. And Mike's one of the longest people that have been on the Patreons. So, like, he's literally an instrumental part of this show's history. And it just means so much Mike, that you've been able to do that for us. So, man, this is going to get harder the closer we get to the day we turn it off forever, you know? Or turn it off for a long time, at the very least. Man, oh, man. All right. If you want to tweet us during the show, if you want to tweet us during the week, you want to catch our thoughts on a random subject or just ask a random question or banter with us because we get something horribly wrong, which happens all the time. At Unused Subs Pod is the Twitter mothership. No, it is not X yet, right? Because that's what he's going to turn it into, is accelerated or something. X. Anyways.
Oh, God.
That's an Elon Musk joke, by the way. Anyways. All right. So it's funny because we haven't been on the air in a couple weeks. There's multiple games to talk about. But the one that happened this previous weekend, the one that we're going to focus on the most, I think, tonight, is the 2-1 Rowdies comeback victory out west over Monterey Bay.
Yeah, it's near the end. We get to pick and choose the games we talk about. We only talk about wins from here on out.
I don't even remember. I mean, I didn't even watch that game because I had a long, long day and could not stay awake to watch. I was following along on the game day tweets and just throwing a couple tweets out there as it was happening. But and I don't even remember the game before that. It's just not in my brain whatsoever.
I turned on the Monterey Bay game fully expecting to fall asleep halfway through it because I also had a very long day. But I ended up staying up to the very end. And, well, that was an interesting game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very, very interesting game. Just as a refresher, so we're not, like, completely ignoring it. The game before last was the home match against Birmingham.
Oh, yes. I remember.
The 1-1 draw where Birmingham scores in the 10th minute and then Fernandez scores in the 17th minute. And then from there on, it's just yellow cards and Jazz.
I think there's an episode title.
Yeah. No, there you go. But yeah, that match, everybody was kind of distracted already because, of course, at that point, the Hurricanes kind of bearing down on us at that point where everybody's like, okay, we're here for a soccer game, but hopefully we're not all, like, you know, literally dead next week. Yeah, so it's kind of a weird match, just vibe-wise, you know, in the stadium. You know, it was kind of hard to get up for the match in a way just because of everything that it was happening. I mean, we ended up getting, you know, technical issues. FC struck again and prevented us from being able to do the pregame show on Twitch because the computer decided.
My last one.
Yeah.
It was going to be my last one.
Yeah. And the computer just decided it wasn't going to work. It just.
Oh, now I remember.
It just decided it wasn't going to do anything. Everybody was down there. We had everything set up. We turned on the computer. Okay, let's go ahead and hook up. Oh, where's the stuff? It's like, what do you mean, where's the, like, oh no, the software's gone. What? The pathway doesn't exist anymore. What? Yeah, that was a nightmare. That actually, I felt really bad for the guys that were trying to get that hooked up. That was really stupid. That whole thing was just like, well, that's out of everyone's hands. That sucks.
I don't want to say that there's no better way to send Dan off, but that may have been the perfect way.
I mean, that pretty much tops the cake, doesn't it? But yeah,
I had things to say. Not really, but I had things to say.
I mean, things were said. They just didn't go out on Twitch. But there is video somewhere.
That's true.
It is true. All right. Yeah, that's the Birmingham match. We didn't lose, and that's good. And especially considering the type of playoff race that we're in and the seeding battle that we're in right now, not dropping points to Birmingham directly is good. That's good. So Monterey Bay, let's just skip to the fun conversation, if we want to call it that. So we bring out a starting 11. That's pretty consistent with what we've had. And they kind of don't perform really all that well in the first half.
No. Did you read some of Neil Collins' comments?
Not yet. I haven't had a chance to go back there and check it yet.
I'll pull them up real quick while you're doing this. This is as close as I've come to hearing Neil like specifically call out specific players.
I rephrase. I've seen snippets.
But he also calls out everyone else too.
Yeah, I've seen snippets of the comments and I was like, you know, at some point I'm going to go back and read the whole quote because, oh man. We all joke about the fact that like we love how fiery Neil Collins can get on the sideline and everybody jokes about it, you know. Oh man, the snippets that I saw of his comments from this past weekend's match, it was a little bit more than just the on the field typical Neil. It definitely kind of spilled over off the pitch a little bit, I think.
He's usually very good when he gets to do like the post game stuff of separating and like filing away the game for the most part and keeping those emotions in check. But from some of the quotes Matt shared, I don't think that happened. I think emotions were at a boil and he didn't know how to simmer them down a bit, which, I mean, he's a fiery dude. Like, surprised it took this long to happen.
Quote, on the rough start to the match, I don't want to spend too much time on the first half. I think it was pretty clear it was way below the standards that I'd expected, littered with individual errors at both ends of the field. While we could have obviously scored goals ourselves, Phil Breno kept us in the game with some really good saves, but there were real self-inflicted mistakes. It wasn't the level of performance we'd have liked in the first half, to put it kindly. One thing that the announcers noted on air, and I hadn't even really fully thought about it, they basically had two training sessions since the Birmingham game to prepare for this. When you figure the players being moved across the state and then departure, getting to California and then, you know, getting a training session in there. And you can cite some of that as, you know, not necessarily an excuse, but a reason, an understandable reason. But also, like you said, this is an 11 that's come out there that has played some significant time this year. There are a lot of veteran players. So at some point you need that veteran talent to take over in a situation where you've had two training sessions and go out there and put on a performance in the face of adversity, because it wasn't the adversity that, say, people to our south are dealing with, but there was some definite adversity going on involved in, you know, getting these guys out of harm's way, what they believed was going to be harm's way at first. And then, you know, 2 days later, it's totally different. And then, you know, reconfiguring flights and everything else to get players out and dealing with changing the schedule. Like, that's understandable. But I don't think Neil's criticism is misplaced at all.
No, I don't. You know, it's funny, too, because looking at how the game flowed, we mentioned, like, the lineup is basically what we've come to expect this year. It's decided to go with Guillen, Antley, and Scarlett along the back line, and Lewis Hilton and Lawrence White played centrally as defensive mids, which is a little bit of a change with Lawrence White being up a little bit further central rather than being as like a dedicated winger type player. You had, you know, Dalgard is out on the outside right. Fernandez has been pushed back to the left. I think this is the second game in the row that Fernandez has been an outside mid rather than on the actual like three starting strikers. So that's an interesting trend as far as how Neil has been kind of deploying the guys out there. And officially the top, you know, the forward three, Jake LaCava, Sebastian Guenzotti, and then Jan Ekra, who, and in Jan's case, he's more of a central attacking mid rather than like a striker. So it's still, in this particular setup, it kind of played more like the 3-5-2 rather than the 3-4-3. Even though in some ways you might list it as a 3-4-3, it didn't really play that way. But yeah, first half was not particularly pretty. Wyk unfortunately makes a random mistake. You can see what he's trying to do. You know, Hilton at the particular moment, you know, what was it? The officially speaking, the 22nd minute of this match early on. Wyk is, he receives the ball. He makes a turn inside the park. Hilton is making a jog back to open up a space and give a corridor for Wyk to pass it into the middle of the field. And Wyk just, like, basically just mishits the play. It's like he slipped on his feet, he trips over himself, whatever it is. He just mishits it because he almost falls down, like, in the process of trying to make the pass. And unfortunately, the ball ends up in the middle of nowhere, and the middle of nowhere happens to also be closer to a Monterey Bay player who can jump on it faster. And it's interesting because, like, the play itself, I think, develops from, like, a throw-in scenario. So Scarlett, in the moment, is, like, on the touchline. So you've only got Antley in the middle of the field at that point. Lewis was dropping back to receive the pass. But then once the mishit pass is made, Hilton stopped. And so his freeze frame moment, the fact that Scarlett was on the touchline at the time, and he wasn't really responding very harshly. Antley was kind of frozen a little bit because there's a Monterey player that was sitting on our back line when the guy from midfield comes up to take over Wyk's pass. So, you know, it's this weird situation where when Monterey gets the ball on the turnover and starts dribbling at our back line, like, everybody on the Rowdies at this point are still in utter shock as to what's happened. Nobody immediately jumped on the ball once the mishit happened. The Monterey Bay players beat us to the punch across the board. And so he takes a few touches. Antley has to dedicate himself into the middle because Hilton isn't back yet to cover for him. Of course, Aaron Guillen, being the left defender, is... he's not anywhere in this play. He was setting up for a potential switch of the field, so he's not anywhere near this area. And Scarlett really wasn't making a rush in, so it was just an easy pass at this point. Now, they made it more difficult than they had to, and they made the goal prettier as a result. That was a pretty tight angle because the pass off to the guy that eventually scored was a little heavy, and so he had to make a really tight shot to eventually make the goal. But it didn't really have to be that fancy of a play, ultimately. It was just a heavy pass. He could have had an easier goal than that. But yeah, it was just a bad turnover. It was an unfortunate play, right? Like, it's a random turnover. Something that's happened a couple times now in a row with games. Just really randomly weird bad plays where it's just like, oops. Not a tactical error, not a tactical adjustment, not another team just playing out of their mind like they're, like, you know, Neymar, you know, embodied or something. It's just like these random, oops, I forgot you were there, or oops, I forgot how to pass a ball like 2 feet and I'm tripping over myself like I'm a toddler. Like, that's just random moments that stink because we drop points as a result, but, well, threatened to drop points as a result in some cases. But yeah, it was just weird because the response from the guys was very lackadaisical, and that stunk. And I think that's part of the issue about, like, Neil's response is we go down 1-0 on a play where, like, nobody was bothering to respond to the play at all, and then the response from the guys was not all that convincing for the second half of the first half of play.
Yeah, I believe I described that whole sequence leading to the Monterey goal is when playing it out at the back is a catastrophe, because it was like every single thing that could go wrong in that one sequence did. Like, it just, it was so frustrating. And then, like I said, we've seen that kind of not exactly, you know, that exact mistake, although what happened in Louisville wasn't too far off. But some of these mistakes, and it's from people you would not expect them to come from, which is what kind of worries me a little bit.
Everybody is allowed an off game and an off night. And with, like you said, 2 days of training, evacuating to the East Coast, only to probably get worse of the storm than they did in where they were, you know, over here. There's things that like it, that aren't being discussed. I don't know if you guys just heard that. I don't know what that was. There's just a loud bang outside. So you okay? I don't know if the mic picked it up. Sound like a gunshot. Could have been a firework. I don't know. Anyway, things that don't get talked about in these situations is like these athletes are human. There's an anxiety, especially if they're not from Florida and this is their first storm and they're watching the news about how everything is going to get destroyed and we're all going to die. Like there's that latent anxiety, and then also trying to you know, put a practice session together, fly across the country and play a game, and it's just all of that. And so it was a crap performance. Neil did what he needed to, but that first half performance, from what I've read and, you know, some highlights and whatever, everything's been said, was definitely not our best. And the fact that we're able to salvage 3 points in the end is good, and it speaks to the mentality and the quality of these guys. But I think a little leeway needs to be there for everything that happened in the last week and that lead up to that game as people.
Neil Collins on the impact of 3 halftime substitutions. We're allowed 5 subs. If I was allowed more, I would have made more. Nicky Law came in and gave us real composure on the ball. He scored a goal that was top quality. Dan, I'm going to serenade you about this goal. Have you seen the goal like on a replay?
Yeah.
When the ball's in the net, off the foot of a cagey vet, that's Nicky Law. Which then made me think, I'm usually not one for repurposing previously used chants or songs, but you could sub that last part in for in the Tejada song, and instead of tequila, you've got Nicky Law. I think it works.
This is why I'm leaving.
God, Matt, that was painful, brother. What the hell?
It was painful for me to do it. I mean, come on. Continued, Castellanos came on and gave us a real presence at the back. That's what our squad's for. The guys that were taken off weren't at the level, but they were not the only ones. So when I say, like, this is – you never – even this, like, he doesn't name names, but he's like, hey, the guys that came off were not good. The guys that came off were Antley making way for Castellanos, LaCava for Deion Harris, Jan Ekra for Nicky Law. There were others that – there could have been others that made way. Instead, they were given a second chance to put it right, and they did that. That's always what's most important. I'm going to assume at least one of those he's referring to is Wyk, who does later make amends for his previous mistake by heading in essentially unmarked another Fernandez cross for the game-winning goal.
Is there anything Leo Fernandez can't do?
I kept watching the highlights and the replay of this game, and that sort of thing. You know, he's gotten a lot of press this year for having this career season in terms of goal scoring, but his assists and his passes are just impeccable right now. You give him 3 or 4 feet and some, you know, some time to make these decisions, and he's putting it somewhere where it's, you know, guaranteed to be a goal. Like when you see him pass it, it used to be like if the ball got to the feet of like Seba Guinzotti or Jake LaCava, you're like, oh, we're probably going to score here. Steven Dos Santos. Nowadays, I watch these games, and when I see Leo have the time and space to make a pass, I just assume it's going to end up as a goal also.
So,
or in Nick Law's case, a golazo.
In hockey, there's something called a Gordie Howe hat trick, a goal, assist, and a fight.
Yeah.
What is the name for what Leo did? I mean, he didn't score, but
I mean, I think it's just the Fernandez. I think you just have to go. I mean, you have to name it after him.
If it was a goal assist and a red card, it would definitely be, you know, the Fernandez. But we should come up with a name for a goal assist and a red card, because I feel like that's going to happen by the end of this regular season, even though there's only a couple games left.
I mean, I felt like that could have been a Forrest Lasso. I just feel like I could have. Especially for Leo, who's out there, and I don't know if he would ever say this publicly, and it might come off as, if he did, as sounding arrogant, but I don't think it is. He knows he's legitimately the most important player for the team right now. And to go into that tackle, which there was no other intention in that tackle other than, well, I'm going to get a red for this. He just really doesn't want to play Loudon this weekend. There was no arguing. There was no debating it. There was no, you know, keeper throwing his arms up. Like, what do you mean a red card? Like that. That's just to do that in that situation where you're just like, okay.
I don't think I've seen the foul, but everybody said, yeah. Like nobody, I didn't see anybody screaming at the ref or anything.
Yeah.
So when I play FIFA, and I haven't had an updated copy in a while, I play a game and I'm playing against the computer and I'm up by like 3 or 4 goals and I want to make it interesting. I just go around and start randomly slide tackling guys to try and get a red card. So I play with like 8 or 9 guys. It looked exactly like that kind of situation.
Look, that situation, it was a cynical play. You knew what he was doing. But here's the thing. The guy wasn't hurt. Like, it was not one of those right. serious foul play situations where it was like you were intentionally trying to hurt the guy. No, it was just you went beyond the pale of soccer to bring him down. Like you could have run up to him and just grabbed
his head up from behind. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you could have just, I mean, to be fair, he just did it to trip him up. Like I said, the guy wasn't hurt, right? Like he's fine. Nothing's there. He wasn't trying to hurt the guy or like end his season or anything like that. It wasn't an egregious play on that sense. Like he could have just run up and grabbed the guy's t-shirt and just kept him from running forward and taken the yellow card instead. Right. Mm-hmm. Like it would have been the same thing, the same type of play, just with a different result. Right. Instead, he goes to ground and uses it as a slide tackle because he's like, I'm going to teach you a lesson of like, stop being, you know, an unsportsmanlike, you know, idiot. And this is that's that whole thing about like how players take care of stuff on the field type of deal. Right. You hear that a lot in like other sports more, you know, especially like you made a hockey reference, like that's a hockey thing, you know. But,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's
a little bit of baseball, too, with like, you know, violating unwritten rules and, you know.
Yeah. And that's I think what this was more than anything. And man, we're not making friends on the road, are we?
Good.
Who cares? are we the baddies now?
Yes.
Not in light of everything that happened after that game this week. We're no longer the baddies, even if we wanted to be.
If anything, it's more. And I'm saying this like three quarters jokingly. It's almost more of a testament to the skill of Leo Fernandez this year. You know, knowing he could make that tackle and not actually injure the guy, but knew he was getting the red card and getting sent off. He was going to make his point, and he did. A lot of it, though, also I think it goes back to and I have seen this from fans of both sides in this. The ref was essentially out of control of that match at that point. In terms of, you saw, you know, both managers giving him their opinions, neither of them very polite. Players just, you know, shouting in his face. This guy. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and I thought about this at, you know, the night of the match watching it and hadn't really thought about it again since then, is, you know, that part starts. I think that was the second time that the same Monterey Bay player was sent to the headlines to be evaluated for possible head injury. And both of those times, like, he's waved back on right away. The first time involved a Rowdies player, too. They both come back on fairly quickly. And it felt like, you know, within 5 or 6 minutes, this guy is sent off twice for possible head injury. And I think I told you guys that I think the referee was being especially cautious and probably rightfully so, considering what we've seen with athletes getting head injuries in other sports recently. But there's got to be, I don't know what the full, you know, USL protocol is for evaluating concussions and clearing players and stuff. But if you're sent off, sent to the sidelines for treatment twice in like less than 10 minutes, both times for a potential head injury, it feels like there needs to be something more to it than, you know, asking them to count to three and then sending him back on.
I will say this, watching the match live, the first time he sent both players off for the collision in the head, I actually did not think it was a collision in the head based on what I saw on the replay. Like, it didn't look like that was what the situation was, per se.
Right.
And it was funny because, like, both players were like, what, why are we going off the field? Why are you forcing us off? Like, there's not anything here. We're good. It was just a shoulder thing or whatever. I mean, I say that because, of course, the Cameron Brate situation, but... Like, you know, it's one of those things where it was like neither player was saying that like their heads had any impact at all. So I can see why when they come off the field and the fourth official's watching and they're monitoring what's happening, why they would have been waved back on. And I think what the only reason why this ended up being weird is because the one guy then does actually have something more akin to a head knock.
Mm-hmm.
Because the second one was like much more obvious than the first. And I don't fault the fourth official and the ref for having him come off the first time, but it's okay, let me rephrase this. I'm not against the referee allowing him back both times if the first one was legitimately a mistake. You know, because he did a proper concussion check or whatever on the sideline, or at least he should have, for the second time.
Right.
And the second time was more legit than the first, in my opinion, anyways. So if he passed the protocol on the second one, assuming they followed protocol correctly, then I was okay with what transpired. But I understand why people would be a little cautious of it, especially after the week we've had in the NFL.
Yeah, and I am not trying to put myself in the situation of me making an evaluation based on what I see on TV. The first one didn't really look that bad, but I'm going to defer to the guy on the field, even if I think he was being a little overcautious, because I think it's better to be overcautious than less cautious in these kind of situations. It just felt really weird in that watching that in that situation, and like I'm sure they're both fine, and I hope they're both fine, and haven't heard anything otherwise, so I don't know.
We could have invited Andrew Keen on for a whole episode of USL concussion protocol.
I'm surprised the episode would even be that long, to be honest. What's the protocol? Yes. Okay, cool. Well, there we go. Nice protocol. Episode, everybody.
Yeah. The game from that point on gets a little spicy because the foul results from the referee had stopped play for the Monterey Bay player to be sent off to be checked for head injury, and does a drop ball restart. And I'm not 100% sure how the sequence of play was supposed to go. The Rowdies, or at least Leo Fernandez, believed that they were supposed to receive the ball back from the dead ball. From the drop ball, and the Monterey Bay player hops on it and basically goes and starts attacking the goal because there's not a lot of time left in the game. Leo takes him out, and then it's on from there. The last few minutes are a little bit spicy. Tempers overflowing. I was getting tweets from people at the game saying, this is the first time I've ever seen like a bench-clearing brawl in a soccer game. Cool. I don't know if that's the same stuff we saw on video, if there was something else going on later that wasn't on camera. There were definitely some discussions going on. And then we mentioned the league posted a statement yesterday, one of the first of many statements we're going to be talking about tonight. And I caught it. I haven't really had a chance to read into it or go back and find out more information. So I'm going to let you guys start off this part at least.
I don't have obviously any real idea of what's going on. I didn't watch the game, so I don't know if any of like the end of the game was televised, any of this mess. But looking at some of the quote tweets and the responses and blah, 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 there seems to have been just a mess post game between players, coaches and staff, whatever. It's still unclear. Monterey Bay fans seem to want Neil punished for flipping the birds at fans, which, you know, I mean, if that's what we're going to start doing, I don't know about that. Neil Collins would be getting fined and suspended every week for language and whatnot. So I don't know where they're drawing the line or what it is. We can only sit here and wait, and hopefully USL will let us know the end result of the investigation, because the USL is not exactly open with a lot of these things. So I don't know. It says the USL strictly prohibits any form of harassment or discrimination on or off the field. I can read the whole statement, but it's just, they open up an investigation of on-field things, and then they strictly prohibit any form of harassment or discrimination on or off the field. If there was discrimination, if it's by a player or a staff member of our team, zero tolerance for that crap. Like, if it's discrimination or anything like that, I'm done. Bye. And I hope the team feels the same way. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't really have any info to put out there or any insight to give you guys. I wish I did. But we'll have to wait and see what's going on here.
I'm going to say, from what I saw at the end, at least in terms of Neil, like, it's nothing that hasn't been seen before. So if that was an issue now, then I would have expected probably to something else would have happened before. If that's the source of what Monterey Bay fans are mad about, then go on down to the jewelry store and get some more pearls to clutch, because you're going to need them. I don't think it's that, though, however.
Garrett tweeted, was it from the goal kick word that Monterey Bay fan, Monterey Bay fans were using? Apparently there was an issue with that. Monterey supporters group says, you know, it wasn't from their section, but I doubt it's from that, because going by like the scrum and everything that everybody's talking about, it seems to be, and it says on field, I think, in the statement. So I don't think it's that, but throw that investigation in there too, because that is also unacceptable in this game. Just add it to the list, USL.
Right.
Watching the broadcast, I didn't hear anything from the. It didn't sound like anything weird to me from the fans' perspective. And yeah, the investigation, from what I understand, is something that happened between players, or at least on the field. It wasn't anything between fans as far as the real concern. Because, like I said, flipping the bird is not a. You don't launch investigations for people flipping the bird, like, ever. Right. That I don't think is what it would be.
I got one for each of you right now.
Yeah.
Well, the USL is investigating you now. Have fun.
Mm-hmm. Ha!
Yep. Come in. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, you know, in our role, you hear rumors and stories about what it could be, and we've heard a couple different versions of some of what the rumors are of what this whole thing is supposed to be about. It's enough of... There's so much... I don't want to say ambiguity. I guess the ambiguity of the whole thing, that it's hard to speculate on it. None of us were there. You know, it's not like we have real eyes on what happened. All of these events, from what I understand, happened after the broadcast was over anyways. So it's not like anybody watching the game would have even actually seen it from a TV perspective. So this whole thing is going to come down, kind of unfortunately, between the Tampa Bay Rowdies players and coaching staff and whatever front office people may or may not have been there, and the entire Monterey fan base and their organization. That kind of sucks. And it is part of the world we live in now, right? And it's weird because you have to be able to navigate the space where rival teams, I mean, we're not rivals per se, but, you know, the ability to throw an accusation out there for a perceived, I don't call it injustice because that's not right, but for a perceived affront, is a way to screw with other potential playoff teams or other teams in general. And that, man, we're in a weird time.
I could do a whole episode or multiple episodes about just about like fan and player and coach relations and like and interactions. It seems from a couple of recent incidences that there's just this thing that like fans think they have the right to just verbally assault players and coaches for 90 minutes and they're not supposed to react. And, you know, for the most part, you know, whatever, but it's going to happen, you know, like these people are human and I don't think you don't buy a ticket and get a, it's not like those restaurants now that you go in and you go get abused and while you're buying your hamburger and like, that's the experience. You don't get to be, you can't sit here and abuse somebody for 90 minutes and if they react, then all of a sudden want an investigation or suspensions or fines or whatever. Like, that's just, that's a whole thing. Like, seeing the Monterey Bay people, the fans complain and wanting Neil, like, something done because of it. It's just like, maybe sporting events or soccer isn't the sport for you. Like, maybe you shouldn't go to the games. And they some people were like, well, our supporter section has, you know, does this and this to eliminate for and be kid friendly. But like, it's still a it's a bunch of men, you know, that are competing at a high level. Tensions will flare. And sometimes they're, again, they're also human and could have a bad moment, a slip, whatever. And we can't expect punishment every time, or if it's, especially if it's something basic like giving a middle finger.
So like I said earlier about how I use Pendleton as a gauge to judge others by, if they follow him or like his tweets or whatever. As soon as I see like fans from the team going to the real classy, like as soon as you pull out the real classy line, that's when that's kind of help you make a decision about whatever it is you're talking about. Unfortunately, I guess we're not going to qualify for the classiest playoffs. Monterey Bay apparently is going to run away with that one, top of the class table. We'll just deal with being in the actual playoffs.
So
hopefully at home.
To bring this back to hockey, there's a trophy called the Lady Bing Trophy, which is like the sportsmanship award, which you'd never want to win. And was it Rangan back in the day that said he didn't want to win sportsmanship award?
Because it was like his introductory press conference, and he had referenced how, you know, the last couple years under Ricky Hill, that the team had won the Fair Play Award for having the fewest fouls, fewest cards, whatever it was. And he said, I guarantee you, we're not going to win the Fair Play Award.
Yeah.
And it was like, on one hand, like, okay, your team's going to have some edge, going to have some fight or whatever. On the other hand, like, going out of your way to kind of glorify that, like, I don't know, I'm necessarily here for that. Like, that's a little bit of an edge that's just, it's kind of bordering on trying too hard in some situations.
Well, we could do another episode on Thomas Rangan trying too hard. but
man.
But I mean, Neil also
outside the rowdy then.
Neil did say he wants players that would kick their grannies, and I think Leo took that as you know, a little too far on Sunday night. But it's the team has an edge, and I'm okay with it. And like I said, also the week leading up to that game was chaotic and stressful, anxiety inducing. So if these guys had a short fuse, I don't blame them. So if it as long. I say that in the bounds of normal, like, outbursts. If it was anything, like, out of bounds, which it seems to be if there's an investigation opened, that's unacceptable. But, like, a temper's flaring a little bit, Neil flipping the bird, Leo maybe just going a little hard on a tackle. I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah, and it sounds like that level of understanding apparently is shared by at least the discipline committee, because there was some speculation that Leo could possibly face additional games suspended for violent conduct. But multiple sources have said, I saw this from JJ Pavlik on Twitter, talked to multiple sources at the league office that it is only going to be a one game suspension. I'm still telling you, I like Leo knows that that El Paso game is going to be a little bit more important than the Loudoun game. Wants to make sure that Seba gets to start another one and get a chance to break that record. Wants to be well rested for El Paso, who is still fighting for their playoff lives, hanging on to that spot. Loudoun's already eliminated. Literally have nothing to play for other than hopefully getting noticed and getting players getting signed and getting out of Loudoun. He just wants the Saturday off. He wants to chill and wants to be ready for the last two games.
Look, all I'm going to say is the source of that rumor probably are people in Monterey, California. Because, yeah, that was, like I said, it was not a serious foul play. It wasn't violent conduct. It was just a trip from behind, and it just was no effort for the ball. So you, that's an auto red, but it doesn't cross any boundaries. So, yeah, there was never a chance from anybody with a rational thought that that was going to have more than a single game suspension.
That was my impression at first. Like I said, there was no injury. There was no intent to injure. It was just a straight up, like, not going for the ball foul, but tempered to not injure the player.
Yeah, exactly. So, Tampa Bay Rowdies, this upcoming weekend, in this upcoming week, we end the season with three games. Two of them are against some pretty poor teams.
I mean, you could argue all three of them are against pretty poor teams. One's just relatively less poor than the others.
I mean, to a certain extent. To a certain extent. I mean, one is markedly better than the others. When you're looking at just the three. In a vacuum, these three games, one of them is markedly a better team than the other two.
I mean, put it this way. You could add up the point totals for the two bookends, and it's one less point than the team in the middle.
Yeah.
the Rowdies. So with that win, let's just do a quick review of the current standings. With that that win,
well, keep
the
in mind,
Rowdies
some games
jumped up.
There are some games tonight, so this table's a little wacky.
No, I've got a different one here that's updated with the scores and the current scores.
Nice.
Rowdies moved up to third place, 58 points behind Memphis, who is on 61 points, but is currently leading 1-0 in their game. So they would, if that results hold, it would be on, they'd be on 64 points. Louisville still in first with 66. I believe they have taken the lead 2-1 on Detroit City. So if that result holds, they will be on a nice total of 69 points. And I kind of went through some scenarios on Twitter the day. This is not going to happen. But if Louisville loses their remaining games, including tonight, and the Rowdies win their remaining games, the Rowdies could take first. It's not going to happen. It's technically possible. It's not going to happen. A chance if Memphis drops points, I think with a loss and a draw in their last games, because Memphis has same amount of games left as Tampa Bay, although after tonight they won't. And if Tampa Bay wins out, then they could move into second. I don't think that's very likely, but it's slightly more possible than getting first place. The one thing that is confirmed, though, is, you know, sitting in third, they have a game in hand, at least one game in hand on everybody playing beneath them. Birmingham's on 32 games. Detroit in fifth place will be on 33 at the end of tonight. Pittsburgh and Miami, the other two playoff teams, are on 32. With 3 points in these last three games, even if they just draw every single game, 3 points gets them a home playoff game, which is going to be important, I think, as we've seen from this year. They're going to play Loudoun, who is bad, 27 points, 8 wins, 3 draws, 21 losses, a minus 30 goal difference. Coming up this weekend, Seba has to get the record in that game. He just has to. Following that, next Wednesday, a week from tonight, so we will not be on air a week from tonight because there will be a game at Al Lang. They will host El Paso Locomotive, who is hanging on to the last playoff spot in the Western Conference with 43 points. They are level on points with Oakland. They're only a point behind New Mexico, but they're only a point ahead of Rio Grande Valley, who is currently losing. and not likely to make up ground. They're only 2 points ahead of Las Vegas, only 3 points ahead of Monterey Bay. So they are still in it. They are, you know, Loudon's out of it. Who knows what you're going to see from them. El Paso's in it. Now, they're going to have a midweek, I think a weekend. I think they actually have a Sunday game before they come here on Wednesday. That's cool. Going to be the toughest of the games remaining, but I think that should be a winnable one too. And then a week from this Saturday, Rowdies will close out the regular season schedule at home with Red Bulls 2. I believe, yes, the worst team in the league by far, with 15 points on 3 wins, 6 draws, 23 losses, a minus 50 goal differential.
Yeah,
this... Get 3 points, get Seba the record. Those are the priorities. Get no one get hurt. Let's go into the postseason with a home game.
Yeah, so El Paso's schedule to end the year is fascinating. Because of the... this is really strange, right? They're actually playing tonight. They play Saturday, and then they play next Wednesday night. Next Wednesday night, next week, against the Rowdies, is their finale for the season.
I thought they had one more after that one. Okay. No, I think I'm thinking of Memphis's schedule, because Memphis has got 3 games left also, although 2 after tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, El Paso's last game is the Rowdies. That, I mean, this is gets really interesting from a perspective of the Tampa Bay Rowdies about, like, what game are you prioritizing of these next 3? How are you game planning for this as far as rotation with squad? And, I mean, it's Neil Collins. We don't do rotation sometimes. But, I mean, you know, how that works out. Because that El Paso game, that may be their win and you're in game. You know, because they're like in a 3-way tie right now for 2 playoff spots. Is essentially how it looks out west for the most part. So, you know, obviously they're going to know what they have to do to get into the playoffs when they come here next week. That is going to be the fight of their lives. So the Rowdies are in for it against a very motivated team at that point.
And there's also the potential that by the time Wednesday gets here, the Rowdies have not only, they've already locked up playoffs, but there's potential they've already locked up a home playoff game.
Yeah.
And there will be very little left to play for. Mm-hmm. Looking at it right now, if they win this game Saturday, and they should, dear God, they should. If they don't, then they need to, like, give away their playoff spot at this point. There's really nothing else to play for other than you want to go out there and win the games in front of you. Like, they can't, they won't be able to move up. They won't get caught and move down to fourth place. Who knows what we're going to see in those games if we get a result this weekend.
I think that's the thing that's interesting is, you know, you don't, I think at this point it's safe to say if the Rowdies want to finish in third, they need to get the 3 points this weekend.
Yeah. And they should, like,
you know, it's an easy opponent. It puts 6 points between. Well, I mean, it keeps the pressure on Birmingham at the very least, right? But I mean, it almost makes that gap insurmountable if you pick up another 3 points against Loudon this weekend.
Well, I mean, it would come down to the tiebreakers, because if you get the 3 points this weekend, then the Rowdies are on 61. Birmingham only has 2 games left, so they can only get the 61. I stopped trying to figure out tiebreakers, but yeah, like,
but, I mean, you pretty much, if you want, yeah,
locked in the third.
Yeah. I mean, if, and I think that's the thing that's good, because if you lose this match or you draw this match and then you end up playing El Paso and El Paso picks up a win because they're playing their hearts out, right? Then you make things really interesting for if you're finished about what seed position you're finishing in the finale. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be in that kind of a position going into the playoffs. I'd rather kind of coast in than fight for our lives, essentially, to get that third seed compared to a fourth seed. You know, it would just be nice. It'd be nice. But let's flip the script a little bit here.
Don't manifest this stuff into our lives, Steven.
Who would you rather play against in the first round as it stands right now? Because in the current setup, if the season ended right this second,
mm-hmm.
we would be hosting Pittsburgh if it ended right this second, because of course there's game playing and stuff like that, so points tables are a little screwy. But it'd be Pittsburgh, right? But if you drop down to fourth, then you'd be up against Detroit. Miami's literally like a point or two behind them. So those three positions are going to start flip-flopping as the end of the season goes on here and the last games are being played. Any one of those. So it's like, is there any level of, hey, we got the 3 points against Loudon, but we like the matchup against like Detroit more than Pittsburgh, so let's just throw away the last two games just to secure a seed that matches us up better in the playoffs? I don't know if you'd ever go crazy, but that would be funny.
Number one, if you get the points against Loudon, I don't think you can give up that spot.
I mean, true.
I don't think Birmingham can get it. Number two, and I'm just going to look at this based on, like, right now the current home teams are going to be Memphis, Tampa Bay, Birmingham. The away teams are Detroit, Pittsburgh, Miami. If I've got to pick out of those three teams, I don't know which one I do want to play, but I know that I don't want to play Detroit. Detroit is in very good form lately. If you just look at those three teams, they've won three of the last five. They've drawn the other two. They're currently losing right now, but it's to Louisville. Like, there's no shame in that, honestly. Pittsburgh has dropped two of their last five, drawn two and won one. Miami's drawn three and two. Like, if I had to pick the ones I would prefer to play, honestly, give me Pittsburgh first as a first choice, then Miami, then Detroit. And it's like Pittsburgh, Miami is like a 1-1A kind of situation if they're coming to Al Lang. I just don't want to deal with Detroit right now.
I'll say this. I agree. I think of the three, Pittsburgh is the best matchup right now. Miami, I think, is sneaky inconsistent, and they actually are a little better than some people think. You know, you look at their results, they're not winning, with flashy results, but they're not really losing games by much. Like, Pittsburgh, when they lose, sometimes loses big. Like, they sometimes have, like, horrible meltdowns.
Right. Right.
Miami doesn't really suffer those types of results. I mean, they've only lost 8 matches all year. I mean, granted, it's the Eastern Conference. Most of us, the entire playoff race has lost less than 10 games. But, this isn't a team that loses matches. They are very consistent. They draw a lot of teams that they need to play. And I mean, hypothetically, they could finish in fifth by the end of the year. You know, that's still within play. I mean, hypothetically, even fourth is still within play a little bit for them. So, I mean, I think that's a team that can be sneaky good. I agree with you with Detroit about avoiding them. I think Pittsburgh is our best matchup. Birmingham may be in the middle of that. I think I would want to avoid Miami and Detroit. Birmingham, I'm okay with, but not loving it. Pittsburgh is, I think, the most favorable.
Yeah. But after tonight, Detroit only has one more game. And if they're going to lose one, they've only got one more game to try and catch up and pass Pittsburgh and Birmingham. And who are they going to play in that last game? Oh, they host Miami. That'll be an interesting match. That'll be interesting. Speaking of in play, just I'm randomly looking at this. You know, the Eastern Conference has been set in terms of who's in and who's out. Final seeds, not necessarily certain. But go look at the West. Like, the top four teams are in. 5, 6, and 7 have not clinched yet. New Mexico United in fifth place has lost 3 in a row and drawn their last two. Like, it's a mess. And then of your non-playoff teams, only defending champion Orange County is already eliminated. Even Phoenix is still technically in it. They're only 4 points out of the playoffs. RGV, Las Vegas Lights, LA Galaxy 2, Monterey Bay, Phoenix are all still in it right now. The West is so weird.
Yeah, and that's why that last match against El Paso is going to be bizarre, because it's probably legitimately going to be a win and you're in game for them.
Yeah. Like, I want to get my goals this weekend. Get the 3 points, lock down the home playoff spot, get Seba the goal record. Don't get anybody else hurt or suspended, preferably. Although, if you're going to do it now and not so it carries over into the playoffs. But looking at this game this weekend, and again, it's Loudon. It isn't going to make a huge difference. Who plays with Fernandez out?
I would think that the way he will handle this is Dalgard will switch to the left mid, and then Deion Harris would start as the right mid. I think that's most likely the scenario. Other potential oddball scenarios could be maybe pushing Guillen as a left mid, because we're playing a, you know, it's Loudon, so against these lower teams, like, it's very common that we see Guillen play as like a midfielder rather than as a defender, and you kind of shuffle around the back line a little bit with Antley and Castellanos and Scarlett playing in the back line.
Give me a Tate Johnson start. I think
if he's in the area, I think he definitely starts against New York.
I can see that. I would also like to see, this is legitimate, because we saw him make his first, you know, his return, his first game in a while. I'd like to see Jake Ehrman get some minutes to get, you know, into kind of playoff shape. Steven Dos Santos was held out last weekend because of a knock he picked up. If he's healthy, to me, you still hold him out. He's had some injury things this year. I would rather him take an extra week or an extra 2 weeks and be ready come playoff times. We've seen the form this year. He's gotten back into that shape, and you know, there's a worry that maybe a couple games off would wreck that. I also don't know. I mean, other than building up confidence by just, you know, banging in two or three against the likes of Loudon and Red Bulls too, which I don't know that necessarily something that he needs to do. I think he's, you know, as a veteran, knows to be ready for how to be ready for playoffs. So I would even hold him out, and at least this weekend. Maybe you play him Wednesday in El Paso, sit him again for Red Bulls too, see how that goes. But yeah, let's get the 3 points in the home game. Let's get Seba the goal record. I don't care if it comes off a penalty, whatever it comes off of, just freaking do it. Let's just get this over with, get it off the minds of everyone, the fans, the players, everyone else going into the playoffs, and let's just go out there and get this done this weekend. Also, because I, looking ahead, I know I'm going to have to leave like halftime on Wednesday anyway, because weeknights and stuff like that. So yeah, let's do this.
In other words, old man problems.
Old dad problems. Yeah. All right. Not a whole lot else to say about that. The other thing, and I'll throw this out to you guys, and maybe it's something we can do at a later point or do more in depth. You know, the Yates report came out this week detailing the systemic abuses and neglect and negligence and everything else going that's been going on in NWSL. In women's soccer in general, starting to see the fallout from it. When we started the show, I saw Chicago Red Stars tweeted that their board of directors have their chairman like stepped aside voluntarily, stepped away from operations. The board of directors has since permanently removed him as chairman, removed him from the board, and are putting in place measures where he is no longer involved at all in any of the day-to-day operations. He's all the way out. Portland has fired staff members, but there is a lot of concern about the owner remaining in place. We've seen stuff going on in Louisville with their NWSL team and their W League team. We're already at 9:20. I don't want to do this where we talk about it for like 5 minutes and let it go, because I don't think that's paying a lot, you know, enough time on the topic. And at the same time, like, I need to read some more into this stuff. But if there's any like quick thoughts we want to get out, and then maybe we can spend more time on it in the future.
Yeah.
I'm still new to this surface by just glossing over it.
I have not had a chance to fully read the report. I've seen excerpts and stuff posted, and it's just
the stuff disgusting. I saw is sickening.
It's awful. And I just want to say the bravery of the women who, you know, first had to like had to live through it and then are telling their stories, and just that the strength and the courage there. But I Merritt Paulson in Portland needs to go. O'Connor in Louisville needs to go. Like, everybody remote, like, connected needs to go. And I didn't watch or listen to you at the USL shows talk last night, but mm-hmm. I do think it is important we do talk about it at some point, probably more in depth, not tonight, because it got to that point because men especially were silent and complicit and covered and did things. I don't think this is just something that the people covering WOSO should be talking about. I think we should all be talking about this. Yeah. Because it's important. The condemnation comes from every corner, and let we stand with everybody, the fans of these clubs that are, you know, the players especially, everybody. It's such a gross thing, and it's systemic. It's not just NWSL. Women's college soccer has all their problems. Youth, it's up and down. And I'm glad that it's finally coming to light. It's ridiculous that it's just now coming. And, you know, Meg Lenahan? Is that her name, Lenahan?
Yeah.
Her reporting is absolutely fantastic. Credit to her for standing up and doing this. And it that can't be easy for to do. And a small shout to like Alex Morgan, who used her star power and her name and was the one to finally be like, realize that she was pretty untouchable in that circle and started bringing this to light and doing what she did and standing with other players. But I don't really have the words yet, 'cause I haven't read and processed it all yet, but every one of these people, especially the named people in that report, should be gone. And NWSL, MLS need to figure out how to remove owners like Paul, like Merritt Paulson in Portland and Chicago. I know DC, Washington Spirit has a new owner finally, but that was a whole saga last year, and it shouldn't.
North Carolina list also, yeah.
Yeah, he's and. I read a bit today about him and how, like, you know, forcing two players to kiss was too much for the national team, but okay, yes, for NWSL. And just like, I just can't wrap my head around this, and break up the old boys club.
Yeah, there's an issue of the fact that, like, you know, monsters will always exist, right? Like, you're never going to. It's not like something that you could just eradicate, right? Like, people commit murder. People do nasty things. They do disgusting things. Like, it will always happen. The problem here and what makes this disgusting is the just absolute level of complacency from so many people in power in so many completely, like, independent of each other places of power that we're all just sweep it under the rug, we'll hire him anyways. Or, oh, we just won't tell him about that. Or, no, I understand. Well, it's bad, but yeah. Well, like, what? This is a legitimate what the hell kind of moment. Like, it's insane that anyone would try and cover something like that up for someone that they don't even have a personal relationship to. You're an employer. They're an employee. There's no level of real loyalty required there if you are found to be doing some abhorrent actions. Why are you doing it? Doesn't make any sense to me at all.
And that's, and there's a thing about, like, one of the coaches being fired for cause, and they knew, and they still were like, yeah, go ahead, hire him. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Like,
that outrages me more than the act of what happened in the first place. Like, I know that seems harsh, and I know that can be controversial depending on who you speak to, and I get it. But I legitimately am more mad about the people that were okay to let the scenarios potentially continue, almost more than the act, than the person that committed the act itself or the act in general.
Yeah, I can just see that, because these people are enabling the behavior.
Yeah,
like, and you're
yep.
You know, and that is just as bad to me. At, like this, you're turning your eye, it's disgusting. It's vile. I don't have actual words in the English language to express it. And the complicity and the turning the heads and just allowing somebody to continue a professional career. And the other thing is, like, Christy Holly, is that his name? I don't know. He didn't even have like the coaching licenses necessary to be coaching at the level, and they just kept letting it happen. Like, it's just up and down failures and just absolute disgust. And it's US soccer, it's NWSL. Like I said, it's up and down. It's just burn it down and start over. I don't know.
You almost wonder if the reason why some of these folks decided to turn the blind eye or just kind of try and sweep it under the rug, if their moral compass, if their own personal moral compass is so skewed for their own actions in their own lifetimes that they yep. look at the scenario that played out with these head coaches, with these staffs and things like that, and went, well, it's not really that bad. We can cover this. That's not that. How rotten to the core do you have to be, even if you've never been caught, to think that that's not that big of a deal? I mean, yep. it just makes you wonder how much dirty crap these people have done in their past that just haven't ever come to light.
Yep.
Yeah. The thing that has kept popping in my mind since the bits of the report and some of the tweets that I've seen and a couple things I've heard on podcasts is, in my job, they call it a mandatory reporter. If a kid says something to me about, you know, this happened or my parents did this, whatever, I have to stop what I'm like. I could be in the middle of class. I have to stop what I'm doing, go find someone to come cover that class. And I have to go to a phone and I have to call the state Department of Children's Services. I can't pass this off to an administrator or to another teacher or send an email when I get a chance. I got to stop what I'm doing right there and report it. They take the information, they get in contact with the people, they decide whether it's something that's you know, reliable or you know, something that needs to be investigated, and they take it from there. I don't have the option of making that judgment myself. That, and if I don't do that, I lose my job, and it can be very difficult sometimes for teachers to lose their job. Like, that's not even a question. That's gone, done, out the door. Why it isn't like that in any of these other situations where, you know, coach and player is different than teacher and student, but there's a lot of similarities too. Like, there needs to be some kind of mandatory system in place. You know, listening to one of these podcasts, one of the players was talking about how, you know, I think it was this incident where the two players were made to kiss in order to get the team out of a training run the next day. She said it took her 3 days to find an actual HR person to make contact with. Like, there's been a lot of effort going put into getting these leagues and these clubs up and running in order to promote women's sports. There's been so much lack of oversight in some of the things that need to be in place, I think, in the name of, well, let's focus on, you know, keeping the team alive, keeping the club running. That's led to this situation. And I think it's probably, I don't think it's just an NWSL thing. There's been, you know, two or three other leagues before that. I'm sure this has been these players and these coaches were in all of these leagues also. This is not something that just happened now. And it's something that can't happen in the future. And the one thing that I also was on my mind, I hope to hell that USL is reviewing this report, and, you know, they're posting nice graphics about, you know, whatever. And but if this is not some kind of guidebook to what they need to put in place, you know, W League's already off the ground. Okay, Well, you need to go back and make sure that's reinforced, that there are systems in place. And before Super League gets off the ground, same thing. But also with these youth leagues, because it's not just a you mentioned it before, it's not just a professional women's soccer league problem. We've seen stuff in colleges. We've heard about stuff in youth systems where there's even less oversight and where the adults in control have even more power and authority. And it needs to be kind of a systemic thing. And we've complained in the past or mentioned in the past how U.S. soccer as a federation is kind of hands off and laissez-faire towards what goes on in these leagues and in these academy programs and everything. They need to be more hands-on with this stuff. There needs to be more oversight. Yes, it costs more money. Yes, it requires more people. Yes, it's burdensome to the organizations, and it may result in less teams and less organizations. I'd rather there be fewer teams than more opportunities for someone to be hurt and ignored.
Yeah, I mean, if U.S. soccer is covering those costs, as they should be in that case, in something like that, it shouldn't affect the like amount of clubs. I mean, because, but that's a different, that's a whole other thing. It's just, I don't know. I'm just angry that like we're here, and that looking at USL and they put out a statement today and it was nothing. It was just words on a screen. And
did you see John Morrissey's reply?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I love that. The Pam Beasley meme from The Office, yeah, where corporate wants to tell the difference between these two pictures. And one picture is the USL statement and the other is just a graphic that says doing absolutely nothing at all.
Yeah.
And then she gets the same picture.
Like USL has an opportunity, like you said, with the Super League and the W League, of mentioning what they're putting in place, because it shouldn't even be putting in place. These things should already be in place since the Super League kicks off next year, I believe. W League already is there. Tell us what you are doing to avoid this situation. You have that opportunity to, you know, build some trust there. But if you're doing less than NWSL or doing nothing at all, then you were just as bad, and you're creating that you're keeping that environment. I know, and I don't think that's like league wide. I know W League, like I can say with near certainty that like Minnesota Aurora is a class organization and will be fine. But like we don't know. Across the board, and what safeguards are you putting in place? But we've already done a lot of time here, and I don't have more to say because I don't know what else. And I like, it's just an absolute mess, and I just, my heart goes out to all of those affected.
Yeah. So we said, you know, maybe we can get more details on this, get more, and also let more events take place. Like for some of these clubs and teams, it's going to be a drawn out process to hopefully remove some of these people. And it shouldn't be, but unfortunately it probably is going to be. Like we said, we're not going to have a show next Wednesday because of the El Paso game. El Paso, I'm not 100% sure. I believe they were down 1-0 to Colorado Springs at the moment, but they may have just equalized. I'm trying to interpret tweets from their podcast. It's what they actually mean. So that would normally mean that maybe the next show we could do this and have this discussion would be in 2 weeks. However, we did promise an announcement, and here is the announcement. We had also promised a live show to send Dan off at Corrigan's before he finally leaves town. Schedules have changed somewhat, and unfortunately for Dan, we're going to follow through with this, and we are going to be live at Corrigan's 2 weeks from tonight. Someone better let Corrigan's know. Mitch, get on that. On October 19th to do a kind of regular season wrap-up playoff preview by Dan episode. So come on out to Corrigan's 2 weeks from tonight. Join us one last time as a happy trio. Because it'll be before a playoff game, and who knows what happens afterwards.
Happy trio. Wait, you're including me in the happy bunch?
Well, yeah, he's not happy. So
am I ever happy?
Hold on. Wait, you think I'm including you in the trio part? It was me, Dan, and just someone else who shows up.
Mitch, you're in.
Touche.
Yeah, Colorado and El Paso are level now. Yeah, so we'll put out more information about it because we literally just kind of decided on this date tonight, and we'll flesh out some details and post some information over the next 2 weeks. I know we've gone long for good reason, for good topics worth discussing, even as little as we could do it. We do have some listener questions. You want to run through them real quick?
Yes.
All right. At least we could do for everybody. From David Morales, should Castellanos start every game? What do you guys say?
I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen him more often. Especially in a starting role. I'm okay with it. I hate to say this, but I still think the weakest link on the back three is not our center back, it's our right back.
Dan, you want to see him every game?
Yeah, that's an easy one. Yeah,
at least these last three to continue to work towards playoff form. I think it'll be some good games for him to get in against. Should Al Lang have a light show after every goal?
No.
Yeah, my point of view. No, there's people who have sensory issues that I think that would be a problem for. I don't, and I've been in stadiums where that happens. They did that in the Open Cup final. I couldn't stand it.
No, it's terrible. And again, people have sensory issues. Accessibility is a thing we should be focused on as well. So, because your stupid stadium light, your flashing lights, goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, one part of my issue with the light show in the Open Cup final was that it involved three Orlando goals. I really didn't care for any of that.
I hate.
I'd feel differently, but I don't think I'd like it.
I hate light shows. I absolutely hate them.
Yeah, would not be my first choice. From Mitch, better show, Welcome to Wrexham or Ted Lasso, and why? Who has the better kit? I'm assuming he means Wrexham or AFC Richmond. By default, Ted Lasso, because I have not yet had a chance to watch Welcome to Wrexham. I saw the beginning of an episode after the Open Cup final as we were scarfing down some pizza near the stadium. I also was not in any condition to consume and process pop culture at that point because I'd been drinking for about 7 hours.
I've watched about three or four episodes of Welcome to Wrexham. And it's really apples to oranges. You're taking a documentary of two Hollywood stars buying. If you were going to ask me Sunderland Till I Die or Welcome to Wrexham, I can do that comparison. But since that's not Mitch's question, I will answer Mitch's question. Ted Lasso is the better show. It's got some great messages, especially in the second season, about healthy male relationships, mental health care, and with a side of soccer. So I will take that all day with my bleeding heart.
Follow-up comment to the light show question from Tom Denham. I'd take a properly functioning video board. Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe that's a priority for this weekend.
Maybe that's fixed. And maybe they looked at it and went, well, the hurricane's going to take it out anyway. So why fix it?
Same reason I don't have shutters or plywood, because I really want my windows replaced, and I was kind of hoping that that'd be the damage I got. Instead, I got tree branches and a couple fence panels. Don't even belong to me. They're all my neighbors. Jonathan Silva, backup keeper? ?
What's a backup keeper?
I believe that's Seba Guenzadi.
No, I know who it is, but what is a backup keeper? This team don't need no backup keeper. Sheesh. Yeah,
they need a lot of backup keepers because they are going to be a starting keeper at some point over the next at least four games.
I do think if rumors and sources are correct, there should be one coming in the next few, like before the playoffs, or like emergency keeper loan type deal for the playoffs.
Let's just say... We talked about how there are a lot of teams still in contention in the West. As that clears up, I think there may be a resolution to the situation.
Yes, but who needs it when you got Phil Breno playing out of his mind?
True. Dan, you've got time to make one more shirt.
I mean, probably.
I already gave you the idea. I mean, you guys can probably make a better version of it, but I gave you the graphic right there. If I could have those, I wonder if I could get those made into stickers in time for the playoffs. I keep thinking, well, we got three games left. Then I realize all three of those games are in like the next week, and the playoffs start on the 22nd. Dan, you're gonna be around for the first playoff game, right?
What day is that?
Potentially, if it's gonna be on Saturday, like usual, Saturday the 22nd.
Yes, that's like the week before I leave. I'm leaving the following weekend, so I will be trying to get rid of couches and stuff. So I don't think I'll be able to make the game because I have repairs around this house I got to do, and which is why I ended it so early, because I have so much to do here still that I need.
You want me to throw another wrench into that situation?
What?
Lightning hosts the Islanders that night.
I know. Oh, don't worry. I already know.
I had the chance to get discount lower bowl tickets, and I was like, oh, I've always wanted to take my daughter to a game. And then I was like, well, it's Islanders. It's right before Dan leaves. Like, that could be like a cool going away present. But if that's going to be the first playoff game, like, there's just no.
I'll probably end up watching. I'll try to split screen. I'll have like two screens out while I'm packing, because the TV is going to be like the last thing coming off the wall.
Let's see if there's any more questions. I think that might have covered it all. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't see any other questions. All right, so let's wrap this up. You know who there isn't a question about, and we've neglected to mention them, and, you know, you can't really do much to us at this point. We've only got a couple episodes left as is. Our buddies at Taco Bus.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have a question, but what they do have, as I try to switch quickly to the show notes to read the script, what they do have is a healthy, fresh, authentic Mexican taste experience for their Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostada, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. Monterey fans, don't get too upset about it. It's just a traditional Mexican folk songs. Visit them today at one of their 11 locations, and remember to keep it chido. Oh, great. We just got another USL investigation for use of language. Took a while, but we finally got to Steven.
Oh, man, you guys.
All right, let's wrap this up, and I'll be honest. I'm going to go to the bathroom and go to bed. I'm old.
All right. Well, thank you to everyone that's listening, of course, and have listened to us for our many years that we've been doing this. Thank you to Wolfface for the great introduction music, to Radio St. Pete for giving this platform to do it online tonight. Corrigan's, of course, and Shamrock. Corrigan's will be there in a couple weeks for the send-off final show for Dan, essentially. So that's going to be fun. So definitely put that on your calendar. That Wednesday night's going to be a great, fun night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's fun. That's what it'll be.
If you can't go check us out on a live show with the last few shows here coming up, you can always subscribe to the podcast. We're still going to put them out as podcasts, those episodes. So that way, and make sure you're subscribed to it and whatnot, so that way you don't miss that episode if you can't get there live. So that way you're making sure you're hearing everything about the Rowdies as we're coming into the playoffs here. Man, guys, we're almost like, you do understand that, like,
we have all of October because and most of November, because the Rowdies are going to come alive and push all the way to the final again. Just
oh, yeah. No, I get that. But you do understand we're like 6 weeks away, no matter what, from like being done with this. Really, like, period. And that's best case scenario.
Well, I will say this. If we make the final and it's at Al Lang, I will be there to do a pregame show and in the stadium.
Great. Now the equipment's going to go out for the final.
Well, whatever. I will be there. Lewis...
If we do this again and we get to do another championship final pregame show, we are going to take like a day to go down there and work on like rehearsing and equipment tests and everything this time, just to make sure it works.
I have faith in them that they'll have it up for a final, but Lewis, Aaron, Leo, Seba all made me promise to be there if there's a final. So I am a man of my word. I will be there. if there's a final.
When there's a final.
When there's a
final. When there's a final.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for sticking around tonight. Editing this is going to be fun because I got like two or three different audio files I've got to throw together thanks to the interruption. So if you have stuck around this whole time, thank you. We appreciate you. We love you. We will see you guys this weekend. Rowdies are going to get 3 points against Loudoun. We just know it.
RGV in Memphis is now level.
Lol.
I believe. RGV has scored at least. Let me double check real quick here.
I mean, to be fair, I've said for months that it was Louisville's first place to lose, and I think I'm going to get
Memphis,
that.
Memphis leads 2-1 in the 80th.
Anyways. Well, we will see you guys this weekend, and as always, I mean, after this week, stay safe, but of course, go Rowdies.